Blog Talk Radio.
As the tears are falling from my face, with all my fears I long for your embrace. How am I gonna carry on and be the one you lead it on when I'm falling down? Now the tears are falling from your face. I never learned from all of my mistakes. How we gonna carry on? Can anybody be?
Good old-fashioned way, but you can live.
she belongs there. So let's stand her up and brush off the dirt and dust. A lady liberty needs our help from every single one of us.
America today. McCormick. We got Richard Kilblaine on the line with us tonight. Rich, how's everything been for you this week, my friend?
Everything's going good for me. I hosted a keto seminar last weekend, and it was interesting. Pat Crosby came down. He wasn't pleased because I shamed him into coming down. So the first night he had me teach, so he could evaluate how I was doing. Got no feedback, so that must have been good news. But the next morning, so that's when people from other dojos came in, and so he called Ukem. Uke is the person who receives the throw, and Ukemi is the Japanese term for, you know, when you receive it, it's rolling or whatever. But
right.
So the first technique, he just slammed me onto the mat, and I realized he's pissed. Okay. I just come running at him, grab him. It was a two-handed. It was me grabbing two of his hands with my hands, and he just threw me. But this time I knew what was going on, and I rolled with it. And I'd just jump up, come back, grab him again. Boom, he'd just throw me again. No more slamming because I was rolling. And then finally he started doing these long throws, okay, and where I'm getting air time from going through there. And
wow.
I was talking to my students afterwards, and they all got the messages like, yeah, he was punishing you. Naoko, who has been with me I've been teaching for 15 years, and she joined us the last year Pat was here. She's just sitting there going, you know, the key thing is, as I'm talking to everybody, nobody felt sorry for me because I was taking good roles, okay? It was, and the thing is, I'm 68 years old. I'm not supposed to be flying through the air like that. So anyway, it's like everybody talked to me, like nobody felt sorry for me, but Naoko's like, well, that's the old Pat Crosby. And Jim Baker, who came over and he was watching, and I had him teach one class. He joked with me. He said, well, this is all very entertaining, but what's the technique we're supposed to do? Because he didn't do the same. He was just throwing me. It's like he just told me using this technique. And so I was pleased. I was pleased with, at my age, how I mean, you think about a 68-year-old guy, you know, flying through the air, taking good roles. Because Yuri, who's one of my new students, and he tested during this. That's why we had the seminars. Testing. And he liked those long rolls. I mean, when I started out, we would like line people up like old Evel Knievel used to jump buses with his motorcycle. Yeah, we just line up people and just see how, add another person on their hands and knees and see how far we could jump, how many people we could jump, you know, but haven't done that in years. So anyway, it was funny that I went over to talk with Jim about his observations. I did that last night. And that's kind of what preoccupied my time.
You know, for me, it's been work and watching the news and trying to stay up on the current events. A lot of things are happening now, and I'll tell you the one piece of news that came out. And before we get into the topic here, was Mike Lindell, the CEO of MyPillow, had his phone seized at Hardee's drive-thru, and a conservative judge that was reviewing his case throughout his lawsuit, saying it was a callous disregard for his constitutional rights. Now, you know, whatever the case may be, you know, if you go up and the guy's in the, you know, in a drive through at Hardee's and an FBI agent runs up and says, give me your phone. And I think that there's a little bit of overreach regardless. Maybe it isn't classified as a callous you know, abuse of your constitutional rights. But it definitely, in this day and age, with as many people that are, you know, stealing and doing things, I mean, I just find the manner in which these things are being done to be very questionable. It definitely isn't professional. And it's one of these things that, you know, I believe that there has got to be a better way of doing things. Now, evidently this, you know,
Right. Best way to describe it is this. Off peak, this is what I keep. I have a friend who is a little left-leaning. He's a moderate liberal. And we have some great intellectual discussions. And as I describe with him, you know, the indictments against Trump, and this is the optics does not look good.
Right.
The optics does not look good. And that's critical because we are so divisive as a nation that if one side feels there is no justice for them. I mean, look at blacks. You know, look at BLM grew out of this Ferguson, and primarily Ferguson. And then the killing of George Floyd. When a side or a group of people feel that justice is not on their side, well, what they got militant. They took to the streets. Okay, so optics is very, very important. And the thing is, it doesn't look like the FBI is. I mean, there's a better way to do this. Okay,
sure.
You know, it's like, you know, everybody else. You know, we're talking about minor. You know, many of these. I remember the one where the FBI came into his house, 6 o'clock in the morning, and you know they had SWAT teams and stuff. I'm like, shit! All you have to do is tell this guy to show up at the court, and he would have done it. You don't need to do it. Heavy-handed law enforcement.
Well,
okay,
that does not look
good.
And when you say that, I mean, it's like everything that you see now. It's like, and I've watched this with politicians. Mm-hmm. They all are trying to put on a show for notoriety. I mean, they might as well go to Hollywood, because most of them, the things that they do, you know, with Biden and with Hunter Biden now wanting to sue the IRS and all this other stuff, you know, it's like, how does any of this help in our country being run? It doesn't. It helps the enemy, that's for sure. The enemy is
no. Hunter Biden doesn't want to go to jail, so they'll use any. They got the money. They'll use any tactic they can to keep from going to jail. All right.
Well,
now the fact is,
you and I do that.
He won't go to jail because his dad will pardon him. But dad doesn't want. The optics looks bad when your son is convicted of a felony and you have to pardon him to keep him from going to jail. So they would rather have the case fall apart before it ever gets there. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Well, a lot of other things going on. This with Mike Lindell, you know, Donald Trump and these campaigns are just, you know, I'm just disgusted myself with watching them. I mean, and I'll tell you what really is disgusting for me is the number of candidates who never served in the military but are trying to throw that military blanket around them. Like, you know, they're trying to wrap themselves in a flag like they've done something. And, you know, we had a couple of candidates, you know, talking about 9/11. Well, where were you on 9/11, you know? And my
well,
question,
James, thing is, the fact that they're bringing that subject up, I mean, keep in mind, post-Vietnam, mm-hmm. you didn't want anyone to know you were a veteran. Now, we have stolen valor, and what you're saying is, politicians who have not served are trying to make it look like they did serve. Well,
yes.
There's a good side to that in that you know, our nation is, I mean, having served actually has political clout. That's a good thing.
Yeah, well, the thing is that it's deceiving the voters. And you know, and I hate to say this, but I mean, some of the voters out there, they need to do a better job at vetting.
Better home, yeah, do their homework, yeah, that's right.
It's rather disturbing when you think about, you know, how in the world did we get to the point, you know, hey, look, Donald Trump, Joe Biden, how do we get to that point? Do we not have better people than that? I'm sure that we do. You know, I mean, and it's like you, and I know there's people out there, they worship Trump, but there's people out there that worship Clinton and worship, you know, and it's surprising. Yeah. I never thought that they really existed, but they do. And I mean, they're willing to die, give their life,
yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like, and then we ask ourselves, well, how did Jim Jones convince all those people to drink that Kool-Aid? Well, they do it every 4 years when they vote for these guys, these clowns in office. They're drinking the Kool-Aid every four years on both sides of this. And it's,
right. So I assume you vote for the Libertarian Party.
Well, what I do is I do my homework on these people, and you know, here recently.
But you vote for one of the two parties. I assume you vote for one of the two parties.
Not
so
always.
You're drinking the Kool-Aid too.
No, not always, Rich. No, I have plenty of times had voted for independents and you know, libertarians and different people. You know, it's to me, it's
that's,
like
that's
I really try
that's
to get
literally
to know
throwing them. Your vote away. Yeah, if
well,
you're voting for a third party candidate, which we really need.
Yeah,
you're throwing your because it's a two party system, and we're throwing our vote away if we don't, unfortunately.
Well, I know, and I know what you're saying, but it's like I can't, you know, I mean, I've got to live with my decision. So, I don't think that we should have to choose the lesser of two evils. What we should have is we should have well-qualified, vetted candidates. And really, honestly, the best thing that could happen for America, money out of political campaigns, totally take it out. Tell everybody, you're limited. Okay, if you're going to hold an office and the yearly salary of that office is, you know, $300,000, and you that office is a 6-year or a 3-year or a 4-year or a 1-year office, whatever it may be, you could not spend more than what you would make in that office for the period of time if you won. And I think that if they did that, and they took the money out of it, then you would see a much better group of candidates. Because then you would have more Americans that can run and not these phonies, these clowns, and these, you know, I mean, we really, in some places, Rich, we have went back to a monarchy. Because I've watched family after family after family, the dad, the granddad, the daughters. I mean, they all just keep getting elected, and the people just vote for them. They just worship them, you know, like I don't know, it's really sad. It's sad, and I think it's why that we see some of the stuff that we're going to talk about tonight, you know, all the new sightings of UFOs, and you know, I've done a lot of reading into this and, you know, studying into this and the biblical side of it, the political side of it. And you know, if you look at the days before Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed, there were a great number of signs around that city. You know, angels came to that city. You know, there were messengers that had been there, you know, and had delivered messages and could only find, you know, that Lot and his wife and his family were the only ones that were worthy of saving. And, you know, Lot was trying to convince them that, you know, hey, if I can find, you know, 10 people, will you not destroy the city? And they couldn't find one, you know, it was just terrible. And I think that we may be seeing some of that. So interesting stuff. Have you been following any of that, Rich, here lately?
No. I mean, when you talk, wait, are you talking about the UFOs?
Yeah, the UFOs and the
revelations. No, see, when I was younger, I did all the, you know, but I also did a lot of research on Noah's Ark. I enjoyed these mysteries. I enjoyed that. And I mean, keep in mind, I lived in Roswell, New Mexico for a year, and they have the UFO museum, and I went and I watched the video, you know, the documentary on that saucer crash. And when I look at it, I said, man, there's definitely all, I mean, while we may not know what they found, but there was definitely, that's a cover up. I mean, like they were hiding something. All right. Everything felt like a cover up. And I'm like, so there was something there, but here's the issue. I'm going like, so they're talking, you know, during, one of the people who went to the crash site had this metal fabric.
Sure.
That folded like cloth. Okay. Mm-hmm. And he showed it off. I mean, there was so much advanced technology supposedly discovered at that crash site.
Yeah.
And that was like almost 70 years ago. How come we haven't seen that technology yet? How come we have not been able to replicate that technology? That's so when I look at, you know, see the evidence, not the evidence, but when I look at the events surrounding it, there was a cover-up. Okay, they were trying to hide something. But if it was what we think it is, how come we haven't seen the fruits of the labor of that? Why have we had been able to replicate that?
Well,
So,
but I think we have. I think that our technology even shows a great advancement, you know, with Oppenheimer's, you know, invention, and you know, and then
no. What I would say is I would differ, because all those things and all the like stealth technology and all that that comes out of Area 51 seems to be a logical technological progression. It's not like a spike where if you stumbled across something, you know, from out of this world, a technology that we didn't have, somehow you would think there would be this spike, but we don't see it. You just don't see it. Okay.
I think
anyway, that's just my take. This is, and my point is, so while I had paid attention to this earlier and I saw all these, you know, I was really interested in it, I lost interest. So, you know, when they had the revelations from the military testimonies, things like that, I just didn't pay attention to it.
Yeah. You know, what is amazing is that, you know, I look at this technological advances, you know, and obviously during World War II, that's, you know, it seems like when I look at the history of America, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but a lot of the secrecy came out of that World War II era. You know, I mean, there were spies everywhere, and there was always signs around that says, don't speak and don't talk about things. And literally, there were things that were buried, and people waited 30 years more and longer to talk about things they did in World War II, whereas you'll see that now. You know, I mean, a couple years, they talk about it. A lot of technological advances occurred in the 1940s. As you know, Germany had a lot of those advances.
Right.
And, but, you know, you think about it, in 1945, when the war ended, did we ever really envision ourselves going to the moon in 23 years later?
Jules Verne saw it.
You know, that's an interesting point.
Science fiction writers envisioned it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, well, see, see, what we if you look at like what happened in World War II, it was competition. For example, the Germans built the jet. All right, so we had to build the jet. And do you know who you know what company makes jet engines? To this day, they still make jet engines. Boeing does not make that. You know, GE, General Electric.
Sure.
Why?
Yeah.
Because you know it was turbo props, and that was the technology at the time. And they're going, you know, no one knew how to make a jet engine. So they're going, well, there's a lot of electronics on it. They test GE, and GE to this day makes jet engines, okay?
Hmm.
Makes bigger and bigger and bigger. But it was the competition. And why did all of a sudden we want to build a nuclear bomb? Because we found out Germany was trying to build a nuclear bomb, all right? So, and the fact that we have money, we just throw money at it. So, competition, sense of urgency, and a lot of money. And see, the space race, it was John F. Kennedy. I mean, the idea had been out there. Like I said, Jules Verne wrote about it. The idea had been out there for a long time, but it was competition because the Russians, you know, launched the first satellite in space. We're embarrassed by it. So then there's a race to see who can put the first man in space. Russians do it. So that's why Kennedy got up there and gave this. It was a race with Russia to see who really could do the hardest task, which is put a man on the moon. And Mike, they can't even put a robot on the on the moon. It crashed. Okay. So the thing is, and if you remember, you know, he took it on as a challenge to see who really, because Russia was beating us over and over again in the space race. So that's why he had that speech that we do this not because it's easy, but because it's hard. All right. And he didn't live to see, you know, the fruition of that thing that he started, but we did it. We did it. And we did it out of competition and money and money. You throw money at it.
Sure.
Yeah. And throughout history, war probably causes more technological advancements than any other single event.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it, because of the two things that I told, you know, competition creates a sense of urgency, and then money, right?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. I'm sure that everybody has seen the reports of these alien bodies that were presented before the Mexican Congress. I mean, I can't even imagine that happening here. you know, but you continuously see, you know, well, you know, the X-ray was done and it found a broken skeletal system. So obviously it's a skeletal system. It wasn't something that was created. You know, there were a lot of discussions, and I've really started to read this because there are so many people. You know, we just had the Mothman Festival in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. And there are a lot of UFO folks that are there, and boy, they were really, you know, out and about because of these mummies that were presented, you know, and the news just continues to get more and more and more. And you know, where no one is debating that they're real. Okay. So they are something that was real and living. They have a skeletal structure. It's different hours. Now there's two reports out there that says that DNA reports that it is nothing, that it is human. You know, it's some kind of a human, maybe a mutated human or a deformed child, or, you know, possibly, you know, you hear all these things. But then you have other reports saying that the DNA shows that it's not of human origin. And it's like, this is where we've got in America, I think, for, you know, far too long, is we've allowed the media to suppress or to sensationalize legitimate news. Now, I personally, I would like to know the real deal on these things. You know, I know that most people would like to hear that as well, too. You know, does this, you know, is this something that lived here? Is this a, does this represent, you know, a stage of, I'm trying to think of the term, you know, not creation, but Rich, I'll tell you, I can't even think right now. But you know, where we came from Neanderthals to this, to
evolution is the word.
Yeah, evolution. Yeah, is this some form of evolutionary? You know, what is it? But the specimens were tested by Mexican doctors and researchers who showed that the specimens belonged to a single skeleton with no evidence of any assembly or manipulation of the skulls. And Peru has said that they've launched a criminal investigation to find out how the alleged non-human alien corpses were taken out of the country to be displayed in the Mexican Congress. So, you know, now Peru wants them back. They've launched a major criminal investigation of this. And this is, I mean, this is ongoing right now, folks. If you're watching the news or something new comes out about every day about this, you know, I mean, it's kind of shocking, you know, that number one, that they would allow it to be presented before the Mexican Congress. And that number two, that now they have went even so far as you know, they've done the test and now Peru wants them back. Well, the fact that they want them back and the fact that they're doing a criminal investigation tells me they wouldn't want them back if they knew they were fake. You see what I'm saying? There's got to be some sort of a benefit to that. If they were fake, then why would they even launch a criminal investigation? So it makes you wonder if Peru has seen, you know, Machu Picchu, all these areas and stuff, you know where I'm talking about. They have ancient civilizations there that have been around long, long, long time ago. So it just makes you wonder, is this the first, or maybe they, you know, they have others like this. I don't know. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, for the show, I'm just going to take the devil's advocate on this and say, right now there is a push to keep antiquities in the country. Okay. Now, while Peru, okay, let's just say they are deformed mummified remains that look like aliens, but are of human origin.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Peru wants them back. Okay, not as a cover-up, but because, one, they came from Peru. It's like, you know, Egypt wants all its mummies back. Greece is trying to get all the pieces of the Acropolis back because they're trying to reassemble it. And
sure.
And a number of pieces are in British museums. So they have a legitimate reason for getting this back. One is, especially now that there's a lot of interest on it, it may not be that, hey, these are aliens, but, hey, they look like aliens. People are interested. We want the tourism dollars. We want the research dollars. Okay? So that's my take on it.
Yeah. Well, I find it very intriguing as I dig into this and you know, and as I've studied this, but also, you know, I've had a deep interest in this for a while. And I've studied the biblical side of this as well. You know, I mean, it's not like this is the first time that these questions have come up. And then when you read the Bible, you know, if you truly believe in the Bible, then you'd have to believe in angels. And you also have to believe in devils, you know, or demons, you know, whichever one term you use. And I think that that's why I say you know, I did a talk on UFOs. And in particular, you know, the military does a 15-6 investigation, as you remember, Rich, anytime that something is seen or heard of. And, you know, and I don't remember a large outcry of UFO sightings while I was in the Army, but I do know of two cases that occurred in Iraq, in and around southern Iraq, especially in and around Ur. And, you know, the fact that there is a biblical mention of Ur and the fact that that is basically in the cradle of civilization in that area, you know, my first thoughts on these is that I think people are seeing what is mentioned in the Bible a lot as visits from angels or demonic. And if Father Michael was here, I'm sure he would agree with me on that, the demonic side of that, depending on what they're doing. You know, I don't know. I had a very interesting discussion, and there were probably 50 people in this room, and they're very interested in this, and they want to know. I'm going to just tell everybody, I believe that people are seeing these things. And I'm not going to sit here and question their mental state, because there's too many people that have seen it. But what I am going to say is my belief is that there's a spike in these sightings whenever there is a spike in hostility. So the Middle East is plagued with war, plagued with tribal warfare, and you see a spike. If you look at all of the sightings, 116 sightings, that our spy satellites and drones have picked up, and now they're being released. You know, they used to not release that stuff, Rich, but it's coming out every day. They have a DOD site that you can go and you can look at these daily, and it's unbelievable how many that they see, how many are being reported, and it makes me wonder, you know, have you always seen these? And my answer to that is probably yes, but I see the spike. I see the spike of sightings here in America now. And what's happening that we talk about all the time, the inability of American citizens to become civil. We have become a tribal society. And I truly believe that these are more so messengers, you know, from God trying to deliver us a message, or possibly could be, you know, demons that that have a sincere interest in continuing this hatred and destruction. You know, and the book of Revelations tells us about so many weird things, and you read about the, you know, the multi-headed creatures and all of these things that are described in the Bible, you know. Undisputable fact, many people will say, you know, but yet they have a hard time believing that someone said that they saw a spacecraft that changed shapes. But you don't have a hard time believing in, you know, the death, burial, and resurrection, or you don't have a hard time believing in the Bible. And if you read the Bible, you will see that many of these things that people are seeing can be attributed to potential sightings of, you know, messengers from God, just like Sodom and Gomorrah. You know, how many times they were told, you know, to get yourself right. And eventually God destroyed the cities. There's archaeological evidence of those cities that were destroyed. So I just don't.
Wait. No, you're making a stretch. There's a lot of debate as to whether, I mean, they were trying to find Sodom and Gomorrah, okay? And then again, trying to explain, right, how it was destroyed, okay? For me, you know, it's best not to go down that road, because when you're dealing in the Old Testament, I don't believe in the inerrancy of the scriptures, especially the Old Testament, because it's been transcribed and retranscribed so many times that the stories have been changed, you know, like, so a disaster, so there's a disaster that takes place, and then you give religious meaning to it. And the best example I have on that is the study of the flood. And that story has been around for a long time. And we've found, you know, even earlier accounts of the flood. And each time it's told, it has, you know, what cultures will take and add to it their own religious significance. And the common story is, I mean, it starts with a man who is warned there's going to be a flood, and he loads all his livestock on this boat. He builds a large boat and loads all his livestock on it, and it's a round boat. And then each successive generation or whatever will then retell the story and to fit their religious and moral agenda, okay? But anyway, and I love studying, like, you know, I'm a fan of studying King Arthur, the original source of King Arthur, and how many times that story's been retold. And each time it's retold, it has a new meaning to it. Robin Hood. Now, fortunately, with Robin Hood, we have many of the poems and stuff that were written, the ballads, that were during the time that people would have personally known of him and his exploits. Okay, but you see how it gets, if you watch Hollywood, every time they make a movie out of it, they retell the story to fit the modern agenda. Okay, so anyway, but I have seen, you know, like Ancient Aliens, and they talk about Ezekiel when he goes into heaven in this chariot of fire or whatever. It's a flying saucer, okay? You know, and people will go through the scriptures and find, you know, miracles or unexplained things and go, aliens, okay? So I would stick to what we know and stick to modern times and the evidence we have there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, archaeological evidence does exist related to the site where Sodom, and I just emailed it over to you.
Right. No. There is a site that they think is, I don't, there's one of them they haven't found, but there's one they have. But
yes.
The evidence doesn't match with the story, with the biblical account. Okay.
Well, it, like it appears to have been, it was destroyed by high heat. You know, they did say that.
Heat, yeah.
Okay, heat, yeah. I mean, extreme,
yes, right.
Extreme excessive heat. And we're talking about temperatures. And I'll read it to you. 3,600 degrees Fahrenheit. And basically, the carbon and ash.
Wait. All right, hold it. All right.
Instantly exceeded.
What's your source on that? No. What,
yeah.
When you're looking at the site, what's your source on that? Because there's a lot of biblical web pages that will cite archaeological evidence that is false. Okay, I mean, I can't tell you how many sites I've seen that show giant skeletons, and they finally discovered the Nephilim, and I'm going, it's all fake, you know.
Dr. Stephen Collins, he was an executive.
No, what's the webpage? It's not the you know, look, there's a lot of doctors out there who are.
It's Stack Exchange it's a Christianity Stack Exchange.
Okay, no, I don't trust those. If it's a Christian webpage, I do not trust them, okay?
Yeah.
That's where I've seen, it's the Christian webpages that where I've seen the giant skulls and the giant bones, okay?
Right. No, that's
they seek out information that's going to support See, it's not like you find information and then you try and interpret it. They make this stuff up.
Dr. Stephen Collins. You can look him up. He's an executive dean at Trinity Southwest University. He's an archaeologist, well known, and he has some writings on that as well. And I think that. And you know, I get it. I know what you're saying,
We're straying from the fact. Yeah. I mean, we're straying from the topic, which is UFOs. I wouldn't cite Sodom and Gomorrah as a example of or evidence of UFOs. I'd pick something else.
Well,
Go ahead.
Yeah. Here's the reason why I say that, Rich. I say that because let's just go to just right here in Point Pleasant, West Virginia.
Right.
We have the Mothman. You know, the Mothman was sighted. You know, and less than a year later, the Silver Bridge collapsed, you know, and they say that these lights, you know, bring about these, some sort of a massive destruction. Now, if you go back to pre-9/11, a lot of the UFOologists and the people that are studying that say, hey, look, we had a skin UFO sightings, and then 9/11 occurred. It's almost like they're the tellers of doom, you know what I mean, that. And the reason why I brought Sodom and Gomorrah up and the biblical implication of that is because, number one, in the Bible, it talks about the visitors, you know, the angels that came and visited Lot and his family and warned them about the destruction of the city. And, you know, the same thing if we went back to your story about Noah. You know, Noah was spoken to by God himself. And said, you know, to build this ark in the middle of the desert.
Which Noah story, which ark story are you going to talk about? The one in Genesis? In all the other, in the Epic of Gilgamesh, yes, gods warned him, right?
Yeah.
But in each one of these, that's the one constant theme is that, I don't think the first one is just there's going to be this cataclysmic flood, and so he goes to save all his livestock. But in all the others, the theme is the gods, you know, one god is going to destroy the earth, and another god warns, you know, Noah or whoever his, whatever name he has in the other stories, and he saves himself. And so the question is, why does God want to destroy the earth? And why does this other God want to save the population? Okay. So they add their religious themes. I would not use that to validate UFOs.
Yeah. And you know, so the biblical side of this is what we're talking about now.
The point is, all right, you're going down water hard on, okay? Because the thing is, you believe the Old Testament. You believe the Old Testament. I don't.
Sure, I do. Okay? Yeah, I believe the Old and the New.
I don't think it's factual. I think it's stories that have been retold and retold to fit a certain theme because there's a pattern to that throughout history. And when I cite the example of King Arthur, there's an original story of a Roman general, okay, who fits the image of King Arthur, okay, but he becomes romantic, and as his story gets told, each time it's retold, it's modified to fit the culture of the time, and if you look, go start with Camelot, and then look at how many King Arthur stories have been told. Now you have badass women warriors in there. Why? Because we're empowering women. All right, there's no badass women warriors in the original stories, but because at that time, you know, it was male chauvinist culture, okay? Women were the objects of our love. Women were who we fight for. More recent stories of movies about King Arthur, you know, the women are warriors. All right, so we retell the story to fit our current culture and agenda. So yeah. I would stay out of the Bible as evidence of UFOs and try to deal more with what the facts we have today.
Well, here's the facts that we have today. They're focusing. There's a focus on 171 sightings in which objects appear to demonstrate unusual, you know, the unusual flight characteristics. I mean, they're tracking these things. They're flying through the air. They go under the ocean. They come back out of the water. And, you know, people are...
No. Now that, I'm going to tell you. Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, like, you've got something that flies in a pattern that no flies in a speed or an erratic pattern. It's one thing to say we saw this, but where they're literally tracking this on radar, and it does not fit the pattern of any technology we have today. Flies fast, and then all of a sudden immediately change direction. All right? So I'm going to say there's something we can't explain.
Sure. And you know, they're definitely, it was so important that, you know, Congress held a hearing on it. And, you know, it's when these pilots and people that, you know, when the military guys come out and start talking about it, and those of us that have been around the military, as you know, there are things that you're told to just keep your mouth shut about. Don't talk about this. They'll think that you're nuts. And in many cases, when I see somebody step out in front of Congress that has absolutely nothing to gain from telling their side of this, they have nothing to gain from this. There's not a lot of money in telling UFO stories. I'll tell you that. There's a lot more hassle that comes with it. And they could potentially, you know, end up in a straitjacket. And so watching that, did you watch the testimony, by the way?
No. Like you said, I lost interest in this a long time ago, and so I didn't pay attention. I told you that before.
Yeah. So, and the thing is that, you know, the U.S. Navy fighter pilot that testified, you know, about his sighting in Southern California, you know, they're the ones that have the video of this thing flying through the water. Now, there were people that came out and said, well, it could have been a pelican. Are you kidding me? A pelican flying at 300 miles an hour? I can't even believe someone would even say something like that. But, you know, they're trying very hard to debunk this story. And I think when I say they, it's not, it's obviously not Congress right now, because it seems like Congress is now, they've set up this whole agency that's tracking this, you know, through the DOD. And they're starting to release all the data related to UFO sightings. I mean, stuff that you couldn't get 2 years ago, you can get now. Heck, it's on the open web now. Everybody can get it.
Mm-hmm.
It's no longer a hidden thing. And that I find bizarre. I find that very bizarre. Because why would they suppress it for so long? I mean, it's obvious they suppressed it because they're releasing stuff that they've held since the 1940s. Why would you suppress it for that long?
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's a legitimate question. I mean, we could come up with all kinds of reasons why. The fact is, I don't think anybody knows, you know, okay, so just because they suppress it, I don't believe is an admission that we know what the source of those sightings are, okay? We can,
yeah,
you know,
I mean,
that's why it's called unidentified flying object. Because we, it's something that we can't explain, and the evidence is there. I mean, we have radar trackings, okay? The eyes, I can tell you this, your eyes can be deceiving. But when a radar sets there and tracks it, well, yeah, that's I trust that, okay? And I think there's plenty of evidence that there's something out there we can't explain. explanation is that it's a technology that exceeds ours on Earth, so it has to be extraterrestrial. The logic is there.
So my question is, do you think this is a threat to national security?
No. What? Okay. Look at the pattern. All right. Now, one of the things you brought up, and when I visited the UFO museum, they pointed this out too. There are patterns, sightings, and there are spikes in the sightings. And after World War II, right, immediately after World War II, there was a spike in UFO sightings. So what happened? Well, it was the development of the nuclear capability. Everybody was in the arms race for building nukes. So see, what you're saying is, hey, there's a spike before 9/11, more sightings before disasters and things like that. What the UFO, when I lived there in 93, 94, and so, because then it was just like, it was very, very it wasn't, I've seen video or I've seen images of the UFO museum in Roswell, and it's a much more professional museum now than when I was there. It was more like a local historical society museum. But anyway, they pointed out that after we popped the nuke, there was an increase in UFO sightings. Why? Well, the logic is that the advanced technology outside our country, found our world, is very interested in what we're doing with this. And so, it could be that with certain events that happen on the Earth that we have an increase in sightings. Okay. And then we can question why.
Mm-hmm. You know, right? You have to think about, boy, what did Orson Welles do in 1938 with the War of the Worlds, you know, and the radio broadcast.
Radio broadcast, yeah.
You know that, and I'm reading this thing. The show went on the air shortly after 8 p.m., and at 8:32, they started to notice. I mean, people really took this for real. They went into a panic.
What's your point there, that people are gullible, which means many of the UFO sightings are actually fake, which many of them are.
No.
Okay.
No, I don't think that at all.
Why did you bring up Orson Welles?
Well,
when you brought up Orson Welles, you know, War of the Worlds radio broadcast, it was a Halloween show, and and he had warned people ahead of time, but people tuned in late, didn't get the warning that's factual, but it came across as a live broadcast of people invading the Earth, and people believed it. They were gullible.
Yeah.
They were gullible. So why did you bring up Orson Welles?
I'll tell you exactly
radio
why.
Okay, go ahead.
Because look what was done with the radio broadcast that was warned that it was fake in the beginning. What kind of a panic would it spread if that was a really true UFO sighting? Maybe that's the reason why that the
we're not talking a UFO sighting. We're talking about aliens invading this our world and taking over. There was a war. It wasn't a sighting. It was a war. Okay.
Right. But the thing is, Rich, is that in the end, you know, when I asked the first question, why would the government suppress it? There's no doubt that they suppressed it. They suppressed it for many years. Now, now is the why.
And that's
a legitimate question. Related to the response that we received from a radio. I mean, the Orson Welles radio show showed us exactly how panic could take over and just choke the life out of people.
I draw a distinction between aliens coming in and invading our country and killing people with laser beams to sightings. Okay, let's look at the facts. Let's this is probably the one thing I might be able to. Let's look at the facts. Mm-hmm. So we have spikes in sightings.
Yes.
Do they intervene? Do aliens intervene world affairs? They observe. That's all they're doing. They're observing.
There are some reports.
All the evidence is pointing to, all they're doing is observing. They do not intervene.
You know, there are some reports and some you know, stories and claims and stuff of aliens intervening in...
Wait. Explain. Be specific.
Yeah, been very specific.
Abducting people for experimentation is not intervening.
Well, abductions is one of them, but
that's,
you know,
right.
There
that's
are...
not intervention. That's not intervention. I'm talking about where they actually try to change and redirect things that are going on in the earth.
Sure,
there's no evidence of that.
Well, there's definitely reports of that. Okay, and when I'm talking about changing, I'm talking about intervening in and to stop an evil act. There have been reports.
I have never heard of one. I've never heard of one. So if you have an example, you need to buy.
I mean, there's definitely.
Now, keep in mind. All right, there are, just like you have conspiracy theorists. Again, remember, I'm just playing devil's advocate. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying, okay, so to create a debate here on the show, because I don't pay attention to this stuff anymore. So I know there's people who look through events in the past and say it was aliens that caused this. It's aliens that caused this, okay? I rank those people with the, especially, I mean, see, the History Channel, this is what, right, this whole UFO thing, probably why I lost interest is because of the History Channel. Because, you know, at one time, the History Channel was really documentaries on history, and then it became Ancient Aliens, and that was it. It was like, all you had was Ancient Aliens, and I hated it. I would flip on the History Channel to find out, like, what they were, if there was a really good war documentary. No, they're talking about how aliens in ancient history, biblical times, came to here and intervened and caused things to happen.
Yeah, UFO.
We don't
UFOlogy.
Have any evidence.
Yeah. Those UFOologists. Yeah.
We don't have. I do not. Yeah. So it's like I see that. So you'd have to cite an example.
Here's an example. Harry Reid.
Go ahead.
Harry Reid, he's dead, you know, Senator Harry Reid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
You know, was interviewed and stated that that confirms that UFOs interfered with U.S. nuclear testing. There is a report from 2015 that states that aliens came to the Earth to stop a nuclear war between the U.S. and the Soviet Union. I mean, there's a lot of stuff.
No, I'm asking you because I'm interested in it because the UFO Museum pointed out is there was a significant increase in UFO sightings after we detonated the nuclear bomb, which implies that we have this new technological capability and they want to monitor it. So you're saying there's evidence that they actually intervened. I would like to know what that evidence is.
Yeah, and you what you'll find.
I just want to know what it is. I don't want speculation. I want to know
Edgar Mitchell, he was an astronaut on the Apollo 14 mission in 1971.
Yeah, and I remember that where he saw something tracking his – is that the one where – He saw something tracking his. I know that. That's
well,
he
says more than that.
Pattern.
So I'm going to send that to you. So I'm going to send that.
Okay.
I can't read it all. I can't read it all, but it's definitely. You know, there's more to it than that. But yes, you're right about that. About that claim. But, and you know, I want us to be able to have this open dialogue because
No, what? We have. No, what I'm saying is, my premise is based on my my observations and interpretation is that if there are aliens who are coming to visit our Earth, are here not to intervene, but to observe, to watch,
yeah.
to collect data. Okay,
yeah.
that's
mm-hmm.
the pattern, the bulk of the pattern. So,
and that's true.
If you're going to say there's intervention, I would like, because I haven't seen that, I would like
yeah.
you to cite specific examples of that. Okay.
Sure. Yeah.
And I'm not saying it doesn't happen. Is that as a historian, I don't see any evidence of intervention
yeah.
by aliens, right?
Yeah. And that's why, you know, look, I there's a lot of things I can't explain, you know, in my life, you know, reasons why that I'm still alive today, probably reasons why a lot of people are still alive today. So a lot of people, you know, when you tell them stories and, you know, look, the fact that for me, though, I'm a biblical guy. So if I see something, I don't think aliens stepped in to save me. I believe that was the hand of God. I don't believe in just dumb luck and fate. I don't. I believe that there is a purpose and a reason for everything. So my beliefs tell me that, you know, why you're able to walk away from some things that you most certainly should have done. And this has been continuous for
right,
many
right.
years.
Jay, no. Yeah. Now, if you're talking about an entirely different subject, and that is God intervenes. God
yes.
has a plan.
Yeah. Yes.
There and you yeah and God and prayer action. A lot of times prayer doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because I believe there's a plan. I mean, I can't tell you how many people who are dying of cancer, whatever I prayed for, and die of cancer. But there are miracles. There are documented miracles.
Sure.
Okay? And the question is, so why this prayer worked? Why does the majority of these prayers don't work? Okay?
Well, ultimately,
but
God's will.
We do know God intervenes. But that
yes.
is a different subject than UFOs. And,
well,
and but I would much rather talk about the intervention. God's intervention in our lives than UFOs.
Well, and that's the thing, though, Rich. I think, in my opinion, and so I've listened to a lot of people. I mean, there were some people that I spoke with, very well-educated people, very, I mean, major business owners, not people that you would think, but they have seen things and they have witnessed things. I mean, we've all seen things we can't explain. I've definitely seen some things I can't explain, and I've talked about some of those things. But the UFO sightings, could they be angels? I say yes. And because of the fact...
I don't think so. Okay, I draw your logic. Go ahead. I'm going to let you go. Go ahead.
Yeah, but because of the fact that the ones that I'm familiar with, or the sightings that I see, they do no harm. They're not out here destroying. So, saying that they're demons, you know, the demons that I know of and I've read about, you know, either do harm or convince you to do something bad. You know, they're the voices
right.
in your head that tell you to go steal, kill, burn, whatever. Whereas in this case, every person that I spoke with that had what I believe was a legitimate sighting or a visit or a close encounter, you know, they made the movie about that. They said that they felt an incredible amount of peace, almost like a near-death experience. And we've talked about some of those. So that's why I'm wondering if some of the UFO sightings, some of the things that people see that they can't explain. So one day we stepped outside of our house here, okay, and looked up at the sky, and I took a picture of it, and there was a perfect burst of cloud that looked like an angel with its wings spread out. Everybody saw it in this community. Pictures, videos of it, you know, there was no explanation how it happened, But it happened right over New Haven, West Virginia. Thousands of people saw it. They still talk about it today. I saw it with my own eyes. My wife, my kids, people saw it. But you don't have, you know, nothing spectacular happened. You know, I was sitting around thinking, well, something's going to happen. Nothing spectacular happened other than you saw it. And then you saw the people trying to explain, well, it's a cloud structure. It could potentially.
Yeah.
I'll never be able to explain it, you know, until I, you know, get before God. I'm sure it'll be explained to me then. But those are the things that I'm talking about, Rich. Those are the things that people, and I felt at peace. I didn't feel like, oh, doom, you know what I mean? Felt how nice. I mean, and you should have seen all the people out looking in the neighborhood. And some people refuse to talk about it to this day because it's like, yeah, I seen it, but, you know, whatever. It's crazy. I should post pictures of it, but and maybe I will one day. So what I want to get your thoughts on.
All right. You want to know what my thoughts are, okay?
Yeah.
So that right up there with the image of Jesus on a piece of toast or a stain on the wall, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Those things are documented. You can see the picture of the image of Jesus on a piece of toast or the stain on the wall. I mean, mm-hmm. if you use your imagination, the question is, so why? Why? Well, I would just say the logic behind that is God uses clouds, whatever, to just show us, or Jesus does, hey, I exist. It's a sign. It's a sign. That's what it is. That's all it is. It's a sign.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a warning or whatever. If you want to start going, if you want to have a discussion about that, okay,
mm-hmm.
how does God speak to us? That's different. You want to talk about UFOs. And
sure.
I keep these two separate, okay,
mm-hmm.
because I have a personal relationship with God. I know he speaks to us. I listen to him. I pray. I am more into the near-death experiences than I am into the scriptures, okay? But the two tend to confirm each other, all right?
Mm-hmm.
But the scriptures can be misinterpreted. But the thing is, so where are you going with to go from UFOs to signs and interaction with spiritual beings?
Yes. Where I'm going with this is that we see an increase of these sightings generally before something really bad happens. And case in point is that, you know, just look at all the sightings that are occurring around, you know, nuclear weapons test sites and sightings that are occurring around the Middle East where it's just horrific things. I mean, when ISIS was on the roll, I mean, there were thousands of UFO sightings, you know, and it's just unbelievable.
All right. So wait. So you're saying, you're implying
mm-hmm.
that UFOs are angels or demons?
I believe so. I believe that there's a potential that
right,
some
I'm
of them
tell
are.
You, go ahead. And tell me why. And then now we got a debate. Now we have a discussion.
Yeah.
Okay.
Here's
right.
why. Because in every case that I know of, they haven't done anything to good people. You know what I mean? I've never heard of a UFO attacking an orphanage. But I have sure heard of you know, bad people doing that. And I've sure seen incidents where, you know, the bad guys outnumbered the good guys. And then all of a sudden, you know, they get wiped out. That happens. And that doesn't just happen because, you know, massive firepower. It goes on along the lines of karma and the fact that there are avenging or intervening angels out there that do things. And it just makes me wonder if some of these sightings that people are seeing and the things that they see and they can't explain may actually be that. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that all UFO sightings are angels or demons. I'm saying the potential some of them to be are.
All right.
So what I contributed to this when I talked about UFOs is that we have our vision is actually deceiving. But when we have like radar evidence, to me, angels and demons do not appear that way. And I have not had personal experience with these sightings and stuff like that, but everybody I've talked to and stuff like that, no. Angels and demons appear as angels and demons. They don't appear as objects that you can track with radar that are flying through the sky in erratic behavior.
Gotcha.
Okay. So I don't connect the two. And that's the reason why.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, that's what I'm saying. There's some similarities. I mean, look.
All right.
Now that you've got out of
statement, tell me what the similarities are.
Well, it's just like
James. When I say that, I'm doing the devil's advocate because I'm not telling you wrong. If you said that there's similarities, I want to know what those similarities are. There's a logic to this debate.
Yeah, sure. Well, in some of the incidents of the sightings, there is also no reports of, you know, I mean, there are no radar reports, but there would be, there's no radar report of this angel vision in the sky, which was, it did look like a bright cloud. It did,
no,
but it,
that's
it
different.
Like
no, that's in, all right. I just want to
say what I'm saying.
I've already explained.
Yeah.
When you see an image, you see an image on the wall, you see the image of Christ on
sure.
the post, or you see it in it. That's different than a UFO, an unidentified flying object. Something you saw, a light, something you recognized that was flying through the air, and erratic behavior. It was a UFO is not a cloud formation.
Yeah. Well. And no one said that. But what I'm saying is that we see things that we can't explain. And if it's moving, if it's flying, you know, if I'm looking up at the sky and I know I see something dart across the sky and I can't explain it, you know, that is an unidentified flying object. I don't know what it is. Could it be an airplane? Could it be a this or that? And I get that part. Are you okay?
No,
can you hear me?
No, I would tell you why the Air Force calls them UFOs is because it's not your vision. It's not relying on vision.
Mm-hmm.
You saw something. It could have been anything. You didn't understand it, but that doesn't make it. But it's where there is actual, like radar evidence or whatever, and they can't explain it, they call it an unidentified flying object. Okay, just because you saw something dart across the air doesn't make it a UFO. Could have been anything.
Yeah, it could have been anything.
But,
you're right.
But my point being is, so what we have is that there's a lot of stuff that can't be explained by the Department of Defense, and they revealed a lot of that to Congress, okay, so we know that there is this possibility that there is aliens are flying around our Earth, okay? So what are they doing? My premise is they're observing. They're collecting data. They're not intervening. You believe they're intervening, and you're trying to make the connection that angels and demons intervene, which we know they do, so that UFOs could possibly be angels and demons. No, I mean, I'm going to argue the contrary because we're talking about flying objects.
Angels.
Well, I mean, an angel definitely is a flying object. It is definitely a flying object.
Explain. No, give me an example of an angel appearing.
Let me tell you exactly. If you get
an object flying through the air.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, look, in Isaiah 68, But Rich, I'm trying to explain.
I know plenty of examples. I'm going to agree with you that angels appear to us.
Yeah.
But they don't appear to us in the form of a UFO. That's my argument.
But they appear to you in the form of a bright light that glides across the sky.
Yes. No,
okay.
No. All right. Cite an example. Go ahead.
Acts 9:3, whenever Saul was going to Damascus and he was knocked off of his
oh, my God. All right. James.
And there are
signs
around
about
him, a light from heaven. You know?
Yes. All right. Was that light in heaven darting across the sky at 300 miles per hour?
We don't know that because we have
no
way to measure
it. No,
that.
No. We know it was a blinding light. If you go and listen to the near-death experiences, they'll talk about approaching this blinding light. Okay.
Yeah.
And what did Jesus described himself in two terms? I am the what? I am the light.
Yeah.
I am the word. I am the light and I am the word. And guess what? When people have, out-of-body experience, near-death experiences, and they encounter God, Jesus, who are one and the same, they experience the light. They go through the tunnel, they experience the light. But that light is not moving across the sky at 300 miles an hour, moving in an erratic behavior.
Well, I'm going to tell you what in Zechariah chapter 5 tells us. Then I turn and lift up my eyes.
Wait, what did I warn you about the Old Testament?
I'm just telling you.
Because
I looked up.
Go ahead.
And behold, flying rope.
Tell me what it is, because I will then refute it.
Rich, here's the deal. They saw a flying object. Whether it was a story or not, they said it.
Right.
I mean, how could they even have the imagination to behold a flying mold?
All right. Quote us. No. Quote us what?
Zechariah chapter 5, verse 1 and 2. And it says, what seest thou? And I answered, I see a flying roll. The length thereof is 20 cubits and the breadth thereof 10 cubits.
Right.
A flying roll.
Okay. So what you're saying is, No. All right. Let's get into the logic of it. So in the Old Testament, there was a UFO sighting. What did that UFO do?
It was observing.
All right. So what you're saying, that's my premise. These things flying through the air, these unidentified flying objects, they're flying through the air that we can't explain because of the speed and the erratic behavior of them. Okay. But they don't intervene. But angels and demons intervene. So what you're saying, we're talking logic here. So you just quoted to me an Old Testament scripture that explained a UFO sighting. What does that have to do with Paul at seeing the light blinded him on the road to Damascus?
Sure. Well, in this day and age, if someone was, walking along or riding along and a light came down from the heavens and it struck them down, it sounds an awful lot like the stories of the people being lifted up in the light in these alien abductions, and they're all lifted up by this beam of light. You've seen it, you've read it, you've heard the stories from people. The difference is that Paul wasn't lifted up. He was knocked down and he was blinded and he was spoken to, asked why he's, fighting against me, and that was Jesus talking to him. And, look, the book of Revelations has all kinds of sightings of things that, that just would be the unexplained. The reason why I say this is that when people have sightings of UFOs where they actually have some sort of an interaction, I'm saying these are probably not the aliens that they're thinking about. I'm saying these are probably interactions with either angels or demons. That's what I'm saying. And
right.
I think that it reacts.
No. Okay. I followed your logic.
Yeah.
The thing is, I disagree. I explained my point. And
sure.
The thing is, I really don't care. In all honesty, I do not pay attention to UFO stories anymore. Okay.
Yeah.
So do you want to do, so the logic of your argument is that all these UFO sightings are really angels and
not all
flying through the air.
Not all. No.
Sorry.
Just
well,
the ones that
not all, but you're saying, okay, so because Jesus described himself as the light, and angels come from Jesus and God, they are light too. So you're saying a lot of these UFOs are actually angels and demons. Okay.
I do. I believe that, and I think that they
okay,
that there
no,
is a
no,
message.
That's okay. We now know where we went with this.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to argue with you.
Yeah. Well, that and the other thing that I want to look at, Rich, is the suppression of this information. So I believe that there are. See, I think it would be, you know, whether you're religious or not, you know, look, I think it would be ignorant for us to assume that we're so arrogant that, and we have a level of arrogance. Humans are arrogant people. And for us to think that God or could not, or there could not be other worlds and other people that are smarter than us and that have technology that far surpasses by 1,000 years what we have. I think that would be small-minded of us. I think that it would really exacerbate our feelings of superiority. I don't believe that humans are as superior as we say we are, and we prove it every day, you know, by some of the crazy stuff that we do. Now, I wanted to get back to the War of the Worlds discussion, so I wanted to explain this point. I think that what Orson G. Welles proved is that you can deceive the people really quickly, and that if a certain thing is told, especially a war of aliens, you know, now you've already marked these aliens and alien sightings, these guys are coming to kill you. That's what Orson G. Welles said in his story, right? It was, we came under a flag of truce, and then they started to destroy us. That was...
All right. I want to point something out. All right.
Sure.
I want to point something out. The War of the Worlds is a Jules Verne story, okay? And
correct.
What Orson Welles did was take that and make a radio broadcast based on the idea that these Martians had invaded the world. Okay, so I just want to add the fact that Orson Welles did not make this up. He took an existing science fiction novel written by Jules Verne and turned it into a radio broadcast that sounded like an emergency broadcasting network.
Exactly. Exactly. And now the American people have had it painted in their heads that aliens are bad. All aliens are bad. So future sightings, whether they be just observing or whatnot, what I'm saying is I'm trying to justify why the government covered it up so long. I believe they did it so that it would not create panic among the population. That's why I believe they did it. I don't believe it was a nefarious thing. I believe it was done sincerely to protect us from ourselves.
All right. So I'm going to disagree, but that's what I do. I'm just going to say, knowing the government is, we can't explain it, all right? So we're not going to reveal this stuff because it'll make us look stupid. That's my premise, okay?
But yeah, if it makes them look stupid, though, that'll create even more fear and panic among the population. Because it's like at
which
that
is
time,
why they don't want to release it. They don't want to release this information because we can't explain it.
That.
And then you're going to get all these questions, and it's going to lead to all these conspiracy.
not conspiracy theories, but hypothesis and stuff like that. And people are going to start, thinking of aliens and alien invasions. Okay.
Maybe you should write another book, Rich. It might be.
I'm a military historian. I'm not. I don't write those kind of books, okay?
You should write one like that.
Nobody's buying that last damn book. There's no point in me writing.
What? Are you serious?
Don't write.
The book?
Yeah,
about
no. The,
Teddy wrote
no,
about?
No. I mean, every book I have written. Oh, the filthy 13 shit. There's something like 4 or 5 YouTubers have made videos about this that are in the hundreds of thousands. And one guy has got his following is like over a million views. And of course, my books, it results in book sales and the filthy Venus sales. And of course, the Convoy Ambush case studies, one, it's online so anybody can read it, but our museum sells it, and it's a people walk in the museum and they see the gun truck story and they go over and they want to buy that book. Okay. And so probably the best historical research I have done, or let me point this out. There is a debate among historians, what is history? So when I'm writing Convoy Ambush case studies about Vietnam and Iraq and Afghanistan, not history, that's journalism, because you can interview the people who are involved in these events. Yeah, that's right. So I can sit there and pick up the phone or send an email and say, hey, tell me what you did here. All right. So historians will say, it's not history until everybody involved or observed this are dead.
Dead.
So you're only allowed the material that is left behind, that they left behind. So that is why I say the they were the Rough Riders is my best written book on history. It's pure history. And if you like the Filthy 13, which is very, very popular, it's written with, I will tell you this, there are only four books out there. Here's my chance to plug my book. 4 books out there on the Rough Riders that were written by people who are not eyewitnesses to the unit. Okay. And of the four, only 2 of us had worn the uniform. And you can definitely, when you read the battles. Now, if you've never worn the uniform, you read the other guys, you got it. Very entertaining stuff. But if you've worn the uniform and you read theirs, it's like, doesn't feel like I was there. When I write, I'm writing like you feel. And Charles Herner, who wrote Arizona Rough Riders, he was a tanker. And one of the things that military people write when that the civilians don't is when they went in, these guys went into battle. We write about who's on your left, who's on your right, behind you, in front of you, okay?
Sure.
That's how we think. None of the other guys do. It's like, hey, they went into battle, and they went up the hill, and there they are. I'm like, there's a whole lot of things that are going on. But what intrigued me was what was going on in their daily lives, the rumors.
I enjoyed it.
You wore the uniform, rumor control. So
Rick,
anyway,
I read
plug
the book more than once.
Plug for my book.
Yeah,
anyway,
I read the book
so
more than once.
Back to UFOs.
Yeah. So do you believe in UFOs?
Yes, I do. But as the name describes them, I can't explain what they are. If you want to know if I believe that they're extraterrestrial, that there are aliens out there with superior technology who are observing the Earth without interfering. And here's a point. When I took, I think it was either chemistry or physics, and one of the things that they pointed out is you can't measure or observe something without affecting it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And so whatever this alien intelligence is that is visiting our Earth, they're operating on the premise that if you know, when you observe from a distance. But if you make contact, you actually disrupt what you're observing. So that's what I believe. I believe there's an alien intelligence that is observing, not intervening. Angels and demons intervene. Yes, they appear as lights, but anything from God and Jesus appears as light. Demons appears as darkness. Mm-hmm. They do not fit the pattern of these UFOs, which can be documented and tracked as, and how, why we explain them as unidentified flying objects is because of the pattern of which they fly.
So let me give you a little bit of history on UFO sightings. We're getting down to the last 15 minutes, but do you know when the first picture was taken of the first UFO sighting?
No.
It was in the winter of 1870, and it was there's a photograph of, it depicts a cloud form. I'm looking at the picture now, so if you look at some of the oldest UFO pictures, and it was over the summit of Mount Washington. And the image is basically, it's one of those stereo views, you know, the little things that the kids used to look at and they put the cards in it. But it is the oldest photograph, and it looks like a cigar, an unexplained cigar-shaped object in the sky. Isn't that weird? That's kind of odd. I'm looking at some of these pictures. So if you just Google, some of you folks, if you just want to look at, you know, pictures of UFOs, and then it jumps into a farmer, you know, they in the 1920s in the U.S., and there's an object in the sky. And again, it's a cigar-shaped object in the sky. At the time that it was taken, biplanes were rare and monoplanes didn't quite exist yet, is what they're saying in this. Colorado sawmill, April 1929. This one's kind of a compelling picture. Very interesting. Just several pictures here. 1937, Vancouver City Hall. You know, and this is a remarkable looking picture, Rich. I don't know if you, I'll send you the link to this. South Africa, 1956.
Dave, don't waste your time because I'm not going to look at it. Like my interest in UFOs ended a long time ago, okay?
Yeah, but it's kind of neat to see the older pictures. So, you know, seeing UFOs and taking pictures of them, it didn't just start after World War II. Evidently, it goes way back to the 1800s and even further back if you read the Bible and you read some of the stories that they tell in there. As you say, Rich, the Old Testament, you're talking about stories. Maybe some of the things they saw were UFOs, obviously. So with that being said, Rich, it's been a great show. Do you have anything that you'd like to say at the closing besides buy your books?
Yeah. Well, I think I put in the plug about my Aikido and put in the plug about my book. So I think I'm done tonight.
Yeah. Hey, look, man, did you never listen to Art Bell? Did you ever listen to Art
Ooh.
Bell on the radio? His name was Art
No.
Bell. Art Bell.
No.
Art Bell had a radio show at night, and he had this deep voice. This is the Art Bell Show. And they always
right.
talked about strange things. I mean, ghosts and UFOs.
Yeah.
And I can remember listening to these shows, you know, at night. But he always had an interesting topic,
right.
Probably the most interesting topic I ever heard him talk about was about when the U.S. military started a unit that did remote viewing. You've heard of remote viewing, right?
No, I don't know what you're meaning about that.
So remote viewing would be you could be setting.
No, it wasn't the military. It was CIA.
There you go.
It was not the military. It was CIA. And there's documentation on it. And the best example of that is a bunch of Italian terrorists captured a general. And we're talking psychics. So remote viewing. And so they got these psychics. And this psychic, you can look it up. So there's an American general who was captured by terrorists in Italy, and the CIA had a psychic identify where they had him hidden.
Yeah.
And they went and found him. That's documented. That is actually documented. Yes.
You're right. And basically, this program was a was a program that existed between the CIA, as you said, and the U.S. Army, that started in, it went from 1972 to its disclosure in 1995. So as far as I know, it's still ongoing. I don't know. It doesn't talk about it.
Well, yeah, but basically, all right. Have you ever seen the movie Men Who Stare at Goats?
No, I've never seen that.
Okay.
Men Who Stare at Goats.
Laughing my ass off all through the movie. And the reason is because I knew, I'm like, I know where that came from. Oh, I know where that, I knew the source of all this stuff. What the whole idea of Men Who Stare at Goats, it's all based on fact, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But it's hilarious. And so, yes, the military did experiment with mind control and all this other stuff, and definitely martial arts stuff. Okay, that's how I know about it, because a lot of it involved martial arts, and so in my research in that, when I watched the movie, I knew the source for most of these stories, and that's why I was laughing, and it was put together so well into a single story. All these events were individual things that took place. Like someone gets this wild idea, and they're going, hey, the holistic warrior, right? Because they brought in Robert Heckler, Professor Robert Heckler from Berkeley, who's an Aikido black belt, and they wanted to try to teach a bunch of special forces guys Aikido, among a whole lot of other things. There's a really good book on it called The Warrior Spirit. Very enjoyable. But I'm familiar with that. I'm familiar with the Mikey Connors, who was training SF guys in Rangdo. And it just, it's like, yes, every now and then somebody pitches an idea to the Army, like, this can revolution, and like they'll try it. What this movie does, Men Who Stare at Goats, hilarious. Men Who Stare at Goats, and George Clooney, and who's the guy that plays the young Obi-Wan, McDowell or something like that. I can't remember his name, but anyway, hilarious movie. And what it does is it takes all these things that are unrelated, where the weird things that the Army experimented in, and ties them together into a single story, and it's done superbly. Okay, like you know, having terrorists listening to Barney, I love you, you love me. I mean, we know that's all fact as torture, okay? It was woven together so well as a story, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've always had an interest in parapsychology. I will tell you, it's just the unexplained, you know, the inability to, you know, it's always fascinating.
All right. Well, we should, you know, like, we got like 8 minutes. We could do a whole show on that. Because let me tell you, all right, first of all,
in a minute or two, just tell me, why are you interested in parapsychology?
Yeah.
Why? What in the world would make you interested in parapsychology, which became very popular in the 60s? Right.
Yeah.
Why
am I so interested? Because of some things that happened, you know, throughout my life that I can't explain.
That's right. We've all right. This is something. All right. So I'm a young PFC, and I've applied for the U.S. Military Academy Prep School, and the captain in charge of the S2 is a West Point graduate. We're winding down. My unit's inactivating, and there's two of us who are going to go to the prep school, and both of us are going to graduate. Okay. So he spent a lot of time just sitting. Our unit's inactivating. We don't have a job anymore. So we spent a lot of time just talking. So this captain, the S2, two of us, and he starts telling us all these stories about West Point to get us ready. But he also told us stories about his time in Vietnam. And he had been detailed to the infantry his first two or three years in the Army, and then he went EMI. And he told me something. He said, all right. So they were out on a patrol, and they went into a RON, you and I know, rest overnight, and you set up your perimeter. And when you say roll out your sleeping bag, you're out in the mountains, the central highlands. When it drops down 20 degrees, you're freezing at night. So yeah, you know, you think it's 50 degrees when it's actually, you know, 80 degrees or maybe 70. You think you're freezing. So they had sleeping bags. So he goes roll it. His radio operator comes up and says, sir, I don't think you should put it there. You need to set your bedroll over here. And he did it. He told me. He said, you know, when someone comes and says, I got a bad feeling or something like that, he said, listen to him. Because that night they got attacked, and a mortar round landed exactly where he had rolled out his sleeping bag. Okay? Yeah, and then when I was a young lieutenant, all my squad leaders, platoon sergeant, came up to me. And, you know, they'd pull me off to the side and give me wisdom. And one time they came up and said, sir, do you think you're going to get wounded or killed in combat? Now, I answered yes, not from premonition, but because I didn't have a lot of confidence in the guys, those squad leaders. And I'm like, I'm going to get killed because I'm going to have to do your damn job. But what they told me was all four of them had been wounded in combat, and they knew it before it was going to happen. So, yeah, and I've learned this. I've learned all this. I've learned the premonitions and things like that, and it's heightened in it. And we could spend a whole 2 hours just talking about
that
process. Okay?
Absolutely. I've definitely I've definitely done my homework and a lot of study on parapsychology and seen things. I mean, look, I'm in the woods all the time, Rich. I'm in the woods all the time. I have seen things.
Right.
And, you know, it's just.
To sum it up, here's the deal. Okay. God speaks to us in many ways. In fact, Father Michael and I are planning to write a book on. The original title was From Lambs to Sheep, but it's the sheep know their master's voice. Okay, and the thing is that God and Jesus speak to people, but the devil speaks to them also. So you know, when we talk hearing things or having gut premonitions and things like that, we could spend the whole show just talking about that. But so I'm just going to leave it with the fact that I have done a lot of research, especially in this recent war. Now, I'll tell you this. So when I was teaching the lieutenants, I said, if you have a soldier who comes up to you and says, sir, I got a really bad feeling about this. I think I'm going to get wounded or killed or whatever. I said, you know what I'd do? I'd walk around and ask everybody else how they feel. And if others start saying, got a really bad feeling about this. Mm-hmm. See, it's not predestination. This is what I've learned, because there's patterns, not predestination. Like what I used to think, because there's plenty of historical records, like, I think I'm going to die in this battle. And he died. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sure.
I thought, like, so if you got out of it, you know, that you're the wall walker fall on you and kill you. It was predestined. No, it's a warning.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing is, so if you walk around and like you on that RSE, the route security element, and you're about to go out there, and you had two people who got sick, and you knew, you remembered that one woman, she was not afraid to go out, but she had gotten sick before, and they got hit. And you knew when she and the other guy said, "I feel sick too," that's when you had, you knew, I joke about it. They were barometers, okay, that we have these premonitions. They're warnings. They're warnings. Take it as a warning. What I said is, so if you have only one soldier said, "I got a bad feeling," it's an IED attack. But if you have several, it's a complex ambush.
Yeah.
Take action. It's a warning. Take appropriate action.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know, I mean, to this day, I mean, I know when bad things are coming, man. I'm just telling you. I can't explain.
That's the point. We have premonitions. We could do a whole. We should do a whole show just on that.
Yeah.
We could cover that in 5-10 minutes. Okay.
We got 38 seconds left. And folks, I want to thank you for listening tonight on Continue Mission. We've had an interesting topic talking about UFOs, a little bit different than what we normally talk about. But look, it is an open mic session, so here we are. We will not shy away from even the most bizarre discussions, you know, within limits. So if anybody has any questions, please reach out to us at wvpurpleheart1863@gmail.com. And I say to each and every one of you, have a good night and be blessed and take care. Good night, everyone. Take care, Rich.
All right. Good night.
Take care, buddy.